Hey everybody, how's it going? Thanks for joining me this afternoon. I am Orin McIntyre. So today, the Supreme Court strikes down Colorado's attempt to ban Donald Trump from the ballot, remove the legitimate opposition to Joe Biden from the ballot. This is important because multiple liberal states had followed suit in an attempt to go ahead and strike the former president from the ballot under the 14th Amendment. We'll dive into all the details that are involved with that. Also, a Blaze journalist, Steve Baker, has been arrested by the FBI for simply doing his job. This is very obviously an attempt to intimidate conservative reporting, make sure that no other story comes out about January 6th or anything else that the Biden regime does not want people to know about. So we'll be diving into the details of that as well. But before we do, guys, let me tell you about the incredible moral duty that you have to hire only the most base people with companies like New Founding. Hey guys, I need to tell you about today's sponsor, New Founding Talent. Look, we all know that the job market is a disaster right now. Based people can't find good companies to work for, and good companies can't find anybody to get the job done. The competency crisis is very, very real. So how do we get these two incredibly important groups together? We need organizations like New Founding. New Founding has created a network of high excellence professionals who are seeking to join grounded American businesses. These are individuals often in elite organizations who are ready for a team and a mission that supports their values instead of working against them. Aligned companies are already using this network to hire high trust, exceptional individuals who can match the culture and mission of their teams. So if you're looking for better employees to build a better world, you need to go ahead and apply for access to the New Founding Talent Network at newfounding.com/talent. You'll get connected with candidates who will build your business. That's newfounding.com/talent. Check it out today. All right. So like I said, the Colorado court had originally gone ahead and attempted to strip Donald Trump from the ballot. Their Supreme Court had decided that he should not be eligible to appear on the state's ballot because of the 14th Amendment and its insurrection clause. Again, as I have explained many times on the show, that language was always chosen by the Democrats, by the media. This was not a mistake. This was not some random occurrence where everyone had suddenly brought up this language that no one had ever used, even for people who had literally made plots against the United States government. All of a sudden, the word insurrectionist popped up everywhere. That was always with the intention of driving home this idea that the 14th Amendment would prohibit Donald Trump from running for office a second time. And that's why they went ahead and invoked it. Colorado ran with that logic and removed Donald Trump from the ballot, or provisionally was going to do so. Other states like Illinois were following suit. And so it was very important that the Supreme Court go ahead and hear this case and make a decision on it. Now, it's interesting that the way this came down was 9-0. It is a unanimous decision in that it allows Trump to be reinstated on that ballot, says that Colorado should not have the ability to unilaterally remove presidential candidates from the ballot. However, the way that decision was reached, the way that different justices got there, is important. And so I want to dive into that in just a second. The 9-0 decision was surprising to many. Many people thought that it would be 7-2. They weren't going to be surprised if radical justices like Sotomayor or Jackson went ahead and beclowned themselves by saying that Donald Trump should not appear on this ballot. However, that's not what happened. Now, the ruling came down, again, unanimous in its decision, that they had that 9-0 decision. However, while you wouldn't call this a dissent because everyone was in agreement that Colorado should not be removing Donald Trump from the ballot, there were multiple versions of the opinion that people attached themselves to. The three Democrat-appointed justices, Jackson, Sotomayor, and of course, Kagan, all decided that they wanted to say that basically a federal judge or some federal authority would have to go ahead and remove Trump from the ballot. This isn't a decision that states should make. Now, this sent a lot of Democrats spiraling out of control. They got very angry at this decision. Of course, they wanted to see Donald Trump get removed. The Supreme Court was not ready to just go ahead and declare the Republic over. Obviously, having a Supreme Court just completely remove the political opposition from the ballot or say that he's in some way unable to run under the 14th Amendment would kind of be the end of the illusion of constitutional law in the United States, constitutional rule in the United States. Now we'll talk about why that may have be over anyway here a little bit later, but it is very clear if the Supreme Court went ahead and did that and made that decision outright or allowed states to make that decision by themselves, that could create a real, very serious constitutional crisis. A lot of Democrats, again, got very angry about this, but they forget the reason the 14th Amendment even exists. The 14th Amendment is created, along with the 13th and 15th Amendments, as part of what is usually termed the Civil War Amendments. They come right after the North victory in the Civil War during the Reconstruction period. It's often called the Reconstruction Amendments as well. And the purpose of that amendment is to make sure that a lot of people from the South, a lot of people who had previously been a part of the Confederacy or the government, these kind of things, did not suddenly populate the entirety of the federal government of the reconstituted United States. So if you allowed states to decide whether or not things were valued as insurrection, if the individual states got to make the decision, that would kind of work against the original intent of the 14th Amendment. If all of the Southern states get to decide whether or not someone is an insurrectionist, well, then no one would have been an insurrectionist, or they would have just made it people they didn't like. And so the decision was always meant to be made at the federal level. Now, a lot of people would argue, and I'd be one of them, that this is a usurpation of states' rights. It's understandable, I suppose, under the circumstances, their motivation. But this is very clearly one of the reasons that the 14th Amendment is a clear shift away from the idea that states could have individual governance and there had to be a centralization at the federal level. Again, you may say, well, that's understandable. That has to be the way it is because of the historical circumstances. And maybe you're right. However, it's very clear that post-Civil War, the idea that states could govern themselves was kind of dead and over. We had decided that, you know, the 10th Amendment was done, the Commerce Clause, the 14th Amendment, these things are all going to just basically make it so that the federal government will make all of the decisions. The idea that states would be able to determine many of these things for themselves was kind of dead and over at this point. But that is the actual reasoning. So it's kind of funny that the Democrats are very angry at the fact that the justices would look at the 14th Amendment and say, no, clearly the intent was to have the federal courts or the federal authorities make those decisions. And that would make them angry that individual states couldn't strip Donald Trump from the ballot, because of course the whole point of putting the authority in the hands of the federal government was to go ahead and take it away from former Confederate states. So they don't even understand the history. They don't understand the motivation, or more importantly, even if they understand it, they just don't care. Because you have to understand that the Democrats are interested in winning at any cost. And to their credit, they don't mince words. They don't actually care about procedure. They'll talk about our democracy. They'll talk about the sacred democracy. They'll talk about the importance of democratic norms and all this garbage. But they don't care at all. They do not care at all in the slightest, period. They are only interested in power. They're only interested in defeating their enemies. They're only interested in stripping someone like Donald Trump off the ballot. They do not care how it gets. They don't care if it gets done by indictments. They don't care if it gets done by the 14th Amendment. They don't care at all. They are just, it's naked power grab the whole way. As long as my enemy can't get reelected, that's the only thing that matters. And so the ideological consistencies or legal nuances present in the 14th Amendment doesn't matter, you know, in the slightest. They're simply not interested. So the three Democrat appointed justices only went so far as to say that the federal government should be the one making some kind of decision here. Now, most of the other justices outside of, I believe, Amy Coney Barrett, went ahead and said something more. They said that actually it needs to be Congress that makes this decision. It's Congress that would define under the kind of insurrection portion of the 14th Amendment what that actually means and how that gets applied. Now, it's interesting because the 14th Amendment was never actually meant to keep people from running. It was never actually meant to keep anyone from even actually winning a contest under the 14th Amendment, an election. It was only supposed to be after the fact that Congress had the ability to remove someone if they found that they were an insurrectionary actor. And so this isn't actually supposed to be there to keep someone like Donald Trump from running in the first place. But again, it doesn't matter. They do not care. The left don't give one iota about what is the actual purpose of this amendment is, or the language or the procedure, any of that. They were just building this narrative in hopes that they would go ahead and eliminate Trump from the running, keep him from being able to act. And so they went ahead and did this. Now, this ruling is important, of course, because other states were following suit and because states like Colorado and Maine have a primary coming up tomorrow. So it was important for them to go ahead and make this ruling and make it clear. However, this does not end the issue. It sounds like it should end the issue, but it doesn't actually completely end the issue. Because as I pointed out on my stream last week, the Democrats have already been building another narrative, another idea of how they could still go ahead and get rid of Trump. And their idea, the one that the article in The Atlantic that I went through last week was laying out, was the idea that even if Trump was to be allowed back on the ballot, if the court did not clearly state that he was eligible under the 14th, that he had not committed insurrection, that clause does not apply to him, then the Democrats could choose to not certify his election after the Electoral College hands it over. So in the event that Trump went ahead and won an Electoral College victory, and in the event that Democrats won the House and they were the ones that would then certify the election, if the Democrats did not feel that the Supreme Court had successfully made it clear that Trump was eligible under the 14th Amendment, that he had not violated, had not committed insurrection, and therefore was not ineligible under the 14th Amendment, they could take it under their kind of their moral guidance. They could say, we're the ones who are going to make this decision. It ultimately falls to us, and we're going to go ahead and declare that Donald Trump was someone who committed insurrection. Now, in the impeachment articles, and this is what they would be pointing to, because remember, none of the charges against Trump, none of the charges that have been leveled against Trump have said that he committed insurrection. None of these 90-something indictments against Trump say anything about insurrection. And that's because they can't prove it in a court of law. There is no way to prove it because in a court of law, you actually have to have proof. There's a real burden of proof. However, there was an impeachment that said that Trump was guilty of insurrectionary activity, or instigating insurrectionary activity. And the impeachment has no legal requirements. You can go ahead and say whatever you want in an impeachment. It's a political process. It's not a legal process. Things are not clearly defined inside that process. And so you can go ahead and say whatever you want. And so they were pointing to that and saying, this is the standard we'll use, not the legal standard in a court of law, because we can't prove that, because he didn't actually commit any kind of insurrection. There is no proof of that. We can't actually create that and hold that charge up in a court of law. However, we can do it in a political proceeding because there is no standard. There's no definition. High crimes and misdemeanors in the Constitution is not legally defined. And so you can go ahead and basically impeach a president for anything. It doesn't matter. And so they were saying, well, because he went ahead and was impeached as an insurrectionist, even though we can't prove that in any law, in any court of law where there's a real standard, that would be the reason that we would feel morally justified in going ahead and denying Trump a presidency, going ahead and saying we will not certify his election. Now, again, that's still a lot of different events that have to occur. You'd have to have Trump win. You'd have to have the Democrats win the House. You'd have to have them feel like it was close enough, or that they could go ahead and justify blocking this. But however, it does leave this door open, because the Supreme Court was clear enough to say that the decision has to be made by Congress. So that means that you can't have a federal court somewhere go ahead and hand down a decision that Trump committed insurrection. You can't have some rogue panel of judges somewhere make that decision. But you can still have Congress make that decision. The power does ultimately still rest with them. And the Supreme Court did not explicitly say that Trump did not commit an act of insurrection. And so therefore, they did not explicitly say that the 14th Amendment does not apply to him. They simply said that the states do not have jurisdiction. And furthermore, the Republican appointees said that only Congress has that jurisdiction, that no federal court could go ahead and go rogue and make that ruling. And so that's going to be the key thing here. There, a lot of things still have to fall into place for that to be something that matters. However, the Democrats can still hold on to this hope. They can still hold on to this idea that Donald Trump's election, if it were to happen, would be illegitimate. And you can see why the Democrats are getting concerned about this. A lot of polling is coming out that is showing Joe Biden with just horrific numbers in pretty much every area. Understandably so, a lot of things aren't great in the country. A lot of people are tired of what's going on. Very clear that Joe Biden doesn't actually run the country. A lot of people are tired of watching this embarrassment of a kind of this weekend at Bernie's presidency continue on. It's hard not to be demoralized in a country where you clearly understand that someone like this is not running your country and you're not allowed to know who is running the country. You can understand why these numbers are going very poorly for Joe Biden. At the same time, a lot of people are looking at things like the border crisis. And they're like, whoever's running this, and I don't know who's running this country, but whoever's running this country obviously is allowing some pretty deleterious things to happen. You don't have to be a hardcore Republican. You don't even need to be a particularly strong American nationalist to understand that constant open borders are just a danger to everybody. They're a tragedy on every level. They're a tragedy for the people who are attempting to cross them and often getting sex trafficked, getting human trafficked, all the drugs that pour over this, all the crime, the number of people who have been killed by illegal immigrants recently that have become very, very prominent figures has become staggering. A lot of people are recognizing the danger of the constant open border. And they're just saying, Joe Biden is just, or whoever is running the country in Joe Biden's name, we don't want to be involved with this anymore. You're even seeing polls that are showing minorities that are usually monolithic for the left, like the Black community, like Latinos. The polls are saying that they're shifting. Now, I'm always skeptical about this. We kind of hear these talking points every time there's an election. We always hear that, oh, finally, this is the election where the kind of the monolithic Black vote for the Democrats is going to break, or we're going to finally see the big sea changed in kind of the Hispanic vote, and suddenly the based minority vote is going to turn out, and this is going to shift everything in the Republicans' favor. I'm always skeptical about that narrative. We did see some shift in the Hispanic vote, especially, again, when you look at places like Florida with Ron DeSantis, places that were always blue, like Miami-Dade, truly did start to shift in a significant way. That does show us that perhaps there is ground to be gained in certain areas. But I am always skeptical of this idea that this is the election where we're finally going to break this. Unfortunately, no matter how you try to slice it, the truth is that these communities have remained staunch Democratic supporters. They've done so even when the Democrats are not acting what you would think as in their favor. They just continue to back the Democrats no matter what. You hope that changes. Maybe it does. Maybe this is the election, but I'm always skeptical of that narrative. Either way, none of this is good for Joe Biden. Now, we should recognize that polls, there are problems there. We do know that, of course, repeatedly Donald Trump was shown to be winning or losing rather dramatically in polls in both the 2016 election and the 2020 election. We were told that Donald Trump only had a 1% chance against Hillary Clinton in the 2016 election. Pollsters really made them a laughingstock of themselves, showing their incredible bias. And so you wonder how accurate these polls can be. Now, there was a lot of incentive for pollsters to go ahead and suppress the Republican vote. It's very clear. And again, we talk about the 2020 election in particular, and how desperate the left was to go ahead and keep Donald Trump out of the White House, and how many professionals were willing to just throw all of their credibility, shred all of their credibility. Doctors, scientists, lawyers, pollsters were among these people. We don't talk about this enough. Obviously, we know that the social media outlets, we know the intelligence community, we know the scientific community, all these people were willing to go out and destroy their credentials, their precious credentials, the things that were supposed to elevate them and make them neutral arbiters of truth in our society. They were willing to light all of this stuff on fire because of Donald Trump, their hatred for Donald Trump. And that's why it feels for a lot of people, like things are crumbling and falling apart, because we replaced a lot of the narrative in the United States with this idea of managerial elites. The managerial elites are the ones who are qualified to lead us. They were the ones that have all the authority. You know, they have the degrees, they have the Harvard and Yale positions, they have the studies, the science is behind them, the science team is behind these people, and that's why they have the authority. And so many of the people in our society who had assumed these positions of neutral arbiter, you know, and there was a lot of social capital in that. Like they sacrificed a lot and worked very hard to put themselves into those positions. And they had invested a lot of the kind of idea of classically liberal neutral governance into the expertise of these people. And the fact that they were willing to light all of that on fire, they not, you know, and it was never neutral, to be clear. There were never neutral institutions. These people were never actually neutral in any of their decisions. They were always nudging constantly. They were always saying, oh, well, we're going to change the definition of this just a little bit. We're going to go ahead and close the Overton window just a little bit. We're going to apply a little bit of censorship. They are always doing that little nudge, right? So it was never neutral. That was always a myth. However, they had successfully kept that myth going because they were always careful about the way they applied pressure. They never burned the credential. They never burned their actual status in an attempt to make big changes. But with Trump, they lost everything. And this is why I have continually said that Trump's only value really is his ability to just drive the left insane. He creates this wrecking ball that just destroys the left, their ability to think, their ability to reason, their ability to have any kind of self-control. He drives them insane. He sets off all of their most ridiculous, insane instincts, and he makes them rip the mask off and tell everybody what they really believe and how they really feel and how they really want to conduct themselves. And so the fact that the pollsters, even people whose job is literally to go ahead and predict elections in theory, right? That's what they're supposed to do. But in actuality, they're often influencing things with their polls. The polls are not actually there to reflect public opinion. They're there to inform public opinion. They're there to guide public opinion. And usually they do this by small percentage points or targeted questions. But in this election, especially the 2020 election, it is very clear that they were just rabidly trying to stop Trump from getting elected. They were willing to say anything. So maybe that's the only source of the polling being bad. And maybe the polling now is fine because that desire to go ahead and bury Trump is gone. And we're just, or rather, it's just not being reflected in the popularity of Joe Biden, and the popularity of Joe Biden is honest. It's hard to know. It's really difficult to know. There's just really, you know, this is the travesty of having institutions completely break down, is there's just no information to trust. Are these people completely deceitful? Are they being honest this time? Was it only that bias? You know, you have to kind of read the bias tea leaves. And that's kind of what we're doing a lot of the times as conservatives. And unfortunately, many times, because we don't have access to the consensus-making apparatus, people on the right don't have access to these things. We don't control these institutions. We get really good at like reading the matrix, right? We have to go through and say, okay, the ones and the zeros there, that's the normal amount of bias. But I can go ahead and read past that and see the data behind that and say, oh no, there is some truth to it this time, or no, that's all false this time. We have to get really good at not just looking at the news, but parsing the news and pulling out the actual information, trying to discard as much bias from the left as possible, read between the lines, and kind of understand what's happening, which is why, again, I like to pay so much attention to what the narratives are being built by the left into the conversation. Because now we see that the Supreme Court here has said, well, we're not going to let the states decide, and we're not even going to let federal courts decide, which, again, has the left just absolutely losing their mind. I'll get to some of the reactions to that in a second. But we're not even going to let the federal courts decide. Instead, it has to be done by Congress. But that has to be done by Congress does allow the specific strategy that the article in The Atlantic went ahead and laid out about how the Democrats could still go ahead and overturn a legitimate Donald Trump victory. So that path that was explained in that article that I broke down last week is still there, which is why I broke it down, because you can still see this narrative thread alive. You can still see this option alive for the left. It feels like it would be a suicide pact do it at this point. It would be like the end of rule of law as we know it. However, how many times does it seem like the end of rule of law should be very clear to everybody, and yet it isn't. So maybe they would try it. We can't know for sure. But we do know that that narrative thread is still alive. That logical thread is still alive. The Supreme Court, while they struck down most of what the left wanted it to do, they did not strike that down. And so that is still there. All right, guys, I want to go ahead and talk a little more about the reactions to this decision, this clearing of the path for Donald Trump to go ahead and continue to run for president, along with the actions of the Biden administration and the absolutely criminal arrest of Steve Baker. But before we do all that, let's talk about New Foundings Venture Fund. Hey guys, I need to tell you about New Founding Venture Fund. Look, we all know that the current system, the current companies out there, the current institutions, they're old, sick, dying, they're sclerotic, they're lame. They can't produce anything of value. And that means that young, talented, innovative people are trying to break out, break free. That's bad news for the establishment, but it's good news for us because that means those people are going to go out and found new companies, create new technologies, and figure out a way forward for our country. If you're interested in being a part of that exciting new future, then you need to check out the Venture Fund. New Founding has rallied the founders who have massive visions for a better future and is investing in these companies through its Venture Fund. The companies they invest in are defined by a simple question. Does the country we want to live in need the company this person is building? Look, venture investing isn't for everyone, but if you're a serious, accredited investor who wants to see a more hopeful future for this country, go to newfounding.com/venturefund and apply to be an investor. Again, that's newfounding.com/venturefund. All right. So like I said, the reaction from the Democrats on this, from the media in general, basically the same thing. Democrats in the media was absolutely ridiculous. Vox, it was funny because a Vox journalist went ahead and said, the written constitution does nothing to protect against tyranny, which is kind of the point of my new book coming out, the Total State. I've made this argument both on this channel and I make it even in more depth in that book. So it's kind of funny that the blind squirrel finds a nut there. He is correct that written constitutions actually can't stop tyranny. But of course, this is the whole point that, there's two movies playing on the same screen. We can't see, the fact that they can't see the fact that we would understand it the same way that tyranny is taking over the United States. They look at, Trump's very existence and they think that means tyranny. They can't even allow their political opponents to run in the United States. They think that's what democracy means, is the ability to ban their opponents. And so he comes to the same conclusion that I do, that that written constitutions can't actually protect from tyranny, but he just doesn't understand what that means. But also Vox blocked me. The journalist blocked me immediately when I pointed out, because of course the ridiculous thing that's happening right now is the left is super angry that the court wouldn't get involved and block their political opponent from running for president. Now, I'm old enough. I'm super old, and so I remember back in the year 2000 when the Supreme Court did get involved in the presidential election when George Bush was running against Al Gore. It all came down to Florida and there were the hanging chads and everything, and they couldn't figure out who was going to be president. And the Supreme Court came in and ruled that Florida couldn't basically change the rules for counting ballots just because it felt like it. Like liberal counties in Florida couldn't just say, oh, well, we're going to decide there's a different standard all of a sudden for counting ballots and reading the ballots. We can go back and we can kind of recount the ballots and decide what each one means on our own whenever we want to. They're like, no, that actually ironically violates the 14th Amendment, the Equal Protection Clause of the 14th Amendment. And because this happened, because the Supreme Court went ahead and took action in that case, for the entirety of George W. Bush's presidency, the left called him an illegitimate president. And this is why, by the way, democracy is dead, guys. Democracy has been dead for a long time. Democracy is a dead man walking. Because for my entire adult life, and this wasn't even my adult life, the 2000 election was while I was still in high school. But from basically the entire time I was aware of politics, we have been questioning every single election. The legitimacy of every single election has been questioned. In 2000, they said that it was illegitimate because of George Bush. And of course, that meant that his election was illegitimate again against John Kerry. And then the right said that Barack Obama was illegitimate because he wasn't born in the United States, birth certificate, all this stuff. And then, of course, Donald Trump, you know, illegitimate. Everything is illegitimate. All of our elections are illegitimate. No side can allow the other one to win and say, yes, we lost fair and square. That's how elections work. Moving on. Every single election of my adult life has been challenged by the other side as illegitimate. And of course, the left did this in the 2000s. And they said, oh, the Supreme Court got involved in this. The Supreme Court pushed this down onto the Florida Supreme Court. And that means that George Bush is an illegitimate president. They, you know, not my president, illegitimate president, fake president. These were the bumper stickers on all the lefty cars for the entirety of the Bush presidency. Well, now the left is saying, oh, well, why doesn't the court get involved here? Why isn't the court going in and forcing the removal of Donald Trump from all these ballots? Why aren't they making it clear that Donald Trump is an insurrectionist and should not be allowed to run? They're angry that he is not being removed by the Supreme Court. So again, no consistency, no ideological consistency. They don't care. They just care about power. But you know, the whole point is, you know, all of this, you know, there is no legitimate election anymore. Everyone calls every election into question. This didn't start with Republicans in 2020. This has been going on for a very long time, my entire life, basically. And it's just this again and again. They can't even apply the consistent logic. Should the Supreme Court be the ones deciding who's president or not? They can't decide. They don't care. They just care about power. They just care about winning. But of course, a lot of crazy reactions here. My favorite one has been the number of headlines from people saying that that the Supreme Court failed to hold Donald Trump accountable. That's been the mainstream media's headline talking point. You can see this across multiple headlines. Failed to hold Donald Trump accountable, or barred attempts to hold Donald Trump accountable, making it sound like the Supreme Court actively stopped the ability, the legitimate ability of other courts or other institutions to go ahead and enforce the actual meaning of the 14th Amendment. Many people talking about how the Supreme Court has failed in its duty, how it's questioned its own legitimacy. Nancy Pelosi said this, of course. And so that's what you see in a banana republic, right? Is, you know, you have to allow my political opponent to go to jail. You have to allow my political opponent to be stripped from the ballot, or you have to remove him from the ballot for me. And if you don't do that, then you're not a legitimate court. Well, that's what you hear from a banana republic. That's not an actual thing that people in a democracy are supposed to say, or a constitutional republic, if you prefer. Not a lot of people are going to be screaming at me. It's a constitutional republic. No, it isn't. Sorry. We haven't been for a long time, but you know, whatever. The point being, you know, that you should not see this behavior in a real country, in a legitimate country that is trying to decide who its political leaders are going to be. You should not see them saying, well, if you don't side with me, and if you don't arrest my opponents, if you don't strip them from the ballot, then, you know, you're not a legitimate organization. That's not actually what you're supposed to see here. But of course, the best one is Keith Olbermann. I love Keith Olbermann because Keith Olbermann is a beautiful lolcow. Like, he is the most precious gift we have. Yeah, you may have your Johnny Come Lately lolcows, maybe the Will Stancils, or, you know, some other idiot. But Keith Olbermann is beautiful. He's a piece of work because Keith Olbermann is the id of kind of the MSNBC wine aunt, right? Like that's who Keith Olbermann is. He says everything the Democrats want to say. Maybe they know they shouldn't say it, but Keith Olbermann says it because he feels, and he just blurts out like verbal diarrhea, the most insane thing that a leftist is thinking. And so it's always great to check in with Keith Olbermann because, yeah, he may look crazy. You know, he's screaming and he's, you know, red faced and he's losing his mind and he's saying the most insane things possible. Sure. Yeah, sure. But this is what Democrats really think. This is what they really think. And this is what Keith Olbermann says here. The Supreme Court has betrayed democracy, and its members, including Jackson, Kagan, and Sotomayor, have proved themselves inept at reading comprehension. So he specifically calls out the liberal female justices here. And collectively, the court has shown itself to be corrupt and illegitimate. It must be dissolved. It must be dissolved. So he is calling for the dissolving of the Supreme Court. One of the three branches of the government must be dissolved. It must be destroyed, right? Now, again, shouldn't be surprising. These people have talked about the need to get rid of the Electoral College. They've talked about the need to go ahead and completely alter the Senate to make it so the Democrats can have, you know, dominance of that as well. They've argued to get rid of any check on unfettered democracy. And the reason that the left wants unfettered democracy is that they are importing voters. Whether they figure out how to get them to vote illegally now, which many of them already are, they're trying to figure out how to do that, or whether they eventually just wait until their children get birthright citizenship and become the next generation of voters. The left is importing a new voter base. They know time is on their side. And they know that the more democracy they get, the more they're going to be able to control and manipulate the government. They're going to have unchecked power because the left controls the media and the media controls what voters think. Democracy and media control are the same thing. The minute we got mass media and we paired it with mass democracy, that was the end of the Constitutional Republic. Sorry, it just was. Like, that you can't have that. Like, oligarchs will control what people think. People believe what media tells them, okay? If you have control of the entertainment industry, if you have control of the news media, if you have control of social media, and there are no checks on democracy, and they are trying to get rid of all the checks because our founders knew that unlimited democracy was a disaster. That's why they built the Electoral College in. That's why they built the Senate in. That's why they went ahead and put in all the different checks and balances that were supposed to block this stuff. They built all this stuff in. The Democrats are working to dissolve anything between them and complete open mass democratic rule because they know they can control democracy. They can import voters and they can pump them full of information from their control of the media while handing out all these benefits, creating client classes, because they're just going to print money forever until the country collapses. They know they can do this. And that gives them the undisputed advantage in democracy. Look, I know this is hard for a lot of conservatives to hear. I know this is heartbreaking, but the Democrats have the winning strategy when it comes to democracy. It's over. Like, as long as you have unlimited democracy, as long as you're unwilling to restrict the franchise, the Democrats are going to win. They have the formula down. Import a dependent underclass. Make sure that they drown out any established voters. Give them a lot of stuff, mostly that you appropriated from the middle class that are already established in the United States, and control the media. They've got it locked down. The conservative strategy of not owning the media outlets, not owning the universities, and not giving away free stuff is not going to work. It's the losing strategy in democracy. The right has the losing democratic strategy. It's simply not going to be victorious. And so, of course, Keith Olbermann wants to dissolve the Supreme Court, just like he wants to dissolve the Senate, and just like he wants to dissolve the Electoral College, because all of these things stand in the way of total Democratic Party, one-party state rule in perpetuity. These are the only boundaries left, and they already control most of this. These things barely slow down the left. They're only pushing like this because they control like 90% of things, and they just can't handle that last 10%. Even though they have this vast amount of power, more power than they've ever had before, it's that last, they get more rabid. The smaller the percentage of resistance is, the more rabid they become because they get so greedy and so unhinged. They're so used to winning and they can't imagine anyone pushing back that they continue to just get more and more irate, more insane, to try to battle for that last few percentage points. So yeah, you get rid of the Supreme Court. Even though the Supreme Court was the tool of the left through the 60s and 70s and beyond to dismantle everything about America, even though the Supreme Court has been their tool to dismantle most of America, now that the Republicans spent so much time getting control of it, now the conservatives actually have somewhat kind of a conservative Supreme Court. Again, it still doesn't side with them most of a lot of the time. But you know, they just have enough to block some of the craziest Democrat stuff. Now it has to be dissolved, right? It has to go away. And I love this moment because this is the funny part. This is the reason I actually put this up here. He demands that it be dissolved. And someone replies to him, "Crymore 90. And Keith Olbermann says, "These aren't tears, fascist," because everything's fascist. "They're urine." By the way, for a moment, Republicans, conservatives, please stop calling things fascist. Okay. Like, this is what the left is doing. They're doing it for a reason. You're just reinforcing their frame. If you have to call it something, call it communist. Like, that's still, nuance. There's more there, but at least, you know, don't use the language of the left. Anyway, those aren't tears, fascists. That's urine. I'm sure you enjoy being bathed in it. So this is a very hilarious Keith Olbermann own here, because he's trying to say that, like, oh, he's saying, oh, I like your tears. I'm tasting your tears. And what he's trying to say is, like, you're drinking my piss, I guess. But actually what he's saying is, I've got a bunch of urine in my face. Like Keith Olbermann is saying, basically, I have pee all over my face. That's basically what he's saying when he's attempting to own this guy. So, yeah, you know, they're about as bright as you think they are. But just kind of an amazing moment there. So, yeah, the overall kind of a win. I say kind of because it's not really a win. Of course, the Supreme Court didn't just strip the Republican candidate off of the ballots. Of course, they didn't just say that the 14th Amendment makes it illegal for Trump to run for office. Because if they did, that would kind of be the end of the United States. So, yeah, they didn't do that. So they did the obvious thing. Now, the fact that it's a 9-0 instead of a 7-2, which many people were predicting, thought that the most crazy justices would still try to get rid of Trump or at least make that move. That says something. However, this is not really a loss for the left, because I don't think most of the left really thought this was going to work. This is what you feed to your base, right? This is red meat for your base, because it looks like you're doing something and it whips them up. It's basically cost-free for the left, right? Like, Colorado doesn't care. Like, Colorado doesn't care if they ultimately lost this. None of them are losing face on this. None of them are humiliated. This is all still a purity test, or, you know, it's a statement of purity for them. They're showing that they were willing to go after Donald Trump. Like, when everything was on the line and they needed to go ahead and defend our democracy, TM, they went ahead and fought against the evil Donald Trump. That's the whole thing that they're doing here. The fact that they end up not actually getting rid of him, that doesn't matter. They went ahead and still had their bona fides out there. None of them are losing face. And so really, this just gives them more ammo for their rhetoric. It's not really a win outside of the fact that, like, okay, well, I guess, you know, Donald Trump isn't just completely illegitimately being stripped off the ballot by the highest court of the land, leading to a constitutional crisis and a possible hot conflict in the United States. Like, I guess at least that didn't happen. But it's not a true victory here, because, again, the Supreme Court still left the possibility open that Congress would define what the insurrection meant here, or, you know, what that would count as under the 14th Amendment. And so they could still go ahead and pull that trick that the Atlantic was outlining. Again, there's a lot of steps between here and there. That doesn't mean that's going to happen, but the ground is laid. The groundwork is laid. And should they enter into that scenario, that could happen. And like I said, when I explained in that stream, that the left covers their bases. These people are evil, okay, but they're not stupid in many cases. They set these media narratives out far in advance. So like they did with the red wave narrative, where, oh, well, you know, it's going to look like Donald Trump won, but, you know, in case it looks like Donald Trump won, just remember there's all these votes that are going to come in later, and they're going to be the legitimate votes, and then things could change, and you need to be ready for that. They set these narratives out for a reason. Maybe these things will trigger, maybe they don't. However, they set them out to make sure that if that in that eventuality, they are prepared. All right. So the other thing that I wanted to go ahead and talk about today was the arrest of Steve Baker. For those who are unaware, Steve Baker is a colleague of mine at The Blaze. I have not got to meet him in person, but he is someone who is a reporter for The Blaze, and he regularly writes or appears on shows at The Blaze. And he was arrested on Friday. He had to surrender to the FBI. Steve Baker was a journalist, still is a journalist, but he's a journalist for The Blaze now. He was not a journalist for The Blaze. He was an independent journalist during the events of January 6th. So what happened is that, like any good journalist, Steve is there at the Capitol watching what's happening. Of course, he doesn't know what's going to happen. Nobody can predict the future. He's just doing his job. He's watching what's happening. He's recording it, taking pictures, writing things down to cover what's happening on January 6th. And when the crowd starts to enter the building, he goes ahead and follows them. He's not doing anything crazy. He's not participating in the protest. He's not running around breaking anything or assaulting anybody. He's simply doing his job as a journalist. But as many people learn The government was very interested in punishing anyone who might have opposition and was at the January 6th. They're using this as a blanket excuse to go ahead and attack anyone who might oppose them. And so Steve, you know, he was an independent journalist there doing his job. But when he joined the Blaze and his stuff started getting more traction and started to become clear that he was going to challenge the narrative of January 6th that the government had put out there, all of a sudden, it became clear the FBI was interested again. They had kind of had this sword of Damocles hanging over Steve's head as to whether or not they were going to charge him with anything. But once his stuff became prominent, once he became a part of a prominent outlet like the Blaze and his stuff started getting traction, all of a sudden they say, oh, you need to go ahead and surrender yourself. Now, he was not told what the charges were, which is crazy, right? You should have the right to know what you're being charged with before he shows up. However, they said, oh, he might go ahead and share that information. Like, okay, yeah, that's how journalism works. But again, very clearly, the purpose was to intimidate Steve. So they brought him, you know, he surrenders himself. He shows up, they handcuff him, and they throw him in leg irons. Now, Steve later found out that he was charged with 4 misdemeanors, which means the court did not need to arrest him. They could have just asked him to appear before the court, but they went ahead and went through this process for a reason. It's about humiliation. Remember, the process is the punishment. Even if Steve is found innocent, even if none of this sticks, it doesn't matter. They want to go ahead and hurt him. And the whole purpose of this is to go ahead and humiliate him, to make it clear that anybody who goes out there and does independent journalism or does journalism that flies in the face of the narrative of January 6th or in what the administration would like people to believe is going to be punished. And so they went ahead and brought him before the court. Now, the Blaze has been given footage of the events in the Capitol from the Speaker of the House's office and others that looks like it is exculpatory. It looks like it will show that Steve Baker was not involved, that the charges against him were ones of parading around, using abusive language, many of the generic charges that they have attempted to throw at most J6 defenders, even if they didn't really do anything that was serious. But this stuff is not going to stick, it looks like, because the footage, at least from what we've seen so far that's been released by the Blaze, looks like Steve was simply taking notes in the background. He's not involved in parading around. He's not involved in doing this stuff. But none of that matters, right? Because they don't care about the truth. They don't care about whether or not even there's evidence at hand that could show that the very charges that they're delivering are illegitimate. They want to intimidate. They want to have this chilling effect. Even if none of this sticks, Steve Baker has to get lawyers. He has to have lots of attorneys. He has to spend all of this time. He has to be terrified about what's going to happen to him. He has to get handcuffed. He has to get thrown in leg irons. He has to get brought into this courtroom. All of this stuff that would have been completely unnecessary. And on top of this, Steve is far from the only journalist who is at the Capitol. The New York Times had journalists going in. The fifth person into the Capitol was a New York Times journalist. He entered through a broken window. It's not like he walked through the doors that were even opened by Capitol Police. Instead, went through a open window. And that person is not in front of courts, not being charged, not being brought in with their arms and legs chained up. This is obviously a particular political prosecution that is brought to go ahead and intimidate people on the right. You know, and I said, you know, when this happened, that like a lot of people, I was just a basic talk radio neoconservative, right? For most of my life, I had all of the opinions you would expect from listening to Rush Limbaugh and Sean Hannity and Dennis Prager and Ben Shapiro and all these people. That's how I understood power. And even though I'd had questions, I looked at what happened with Trump in 2016 and I said, man, that's strange, you know, the way they're reacting to this. And I started digging a little deeper. Even then, by 2020, I still had most of the opinions that you kind of would expect. But then there was COVID, and then there was the riots, and then there was the 2020 election. And I was like, wow, none of this is what I believe. None of this actually explains what's going on. None of the things I think about American politics, none of the things that have been explained to me actually show us what's going on. And you look at what's happening to Steve Baker and many others, and you realize that the Constitution just does not protect these rights. It simply does not. I'm sorry, but there's just no understanding of the First Amendment that allows a New York Times reporter to enter and report on what's happening. And a guy like Steve Baker to not be able to do that and to be arrested and to be thrown in chains. There's just no understanding of that other than the state gets to decide who's a legitimate journalist and the state gets to decide who gets to write narratives and the state needs to control the media because that's exactly what it is. That's all it is. The state understands, like I said previously, the democracy is a contest of who controls the media and who gives out free stuff. That's it. That's how you win in a democracy. And because America has become a democracy, because we have eroded everything that made us a constitutional republic, and we have become a democracy, this is very effective. These tactics are very effective. And so they need to go ahead and limit the ability of anyone who's not a regime journalist, who is not approved by the state, or is not actually driving, in many cases, the narrative of the state from one of these approved New York Times-style outlets. They need to go ahead and silence those people. And the best way to do that is to intimidate them, to use lawfare, to go ahead and make it clear that if you step out of line, you're going to get hit. And so that's what's happening with Steve Baker is blatant. It's obvious. This is probably going to continue until you actually see action. I mean, it's really clear. The FBI took control of, you know, of this. The DOJ, you know, is pursuing this, and the FBI are the ones that Steve Baker had to go ahead and surrender himself to. If you're a GOP governor, you have to start thinking about what that means. You have to start wondering, how am I going to let illegitimate law enforcement agencies, state police, the you know, federal police, who are basically just political thugs for my political enemies, am I going to allow them to operate inside the borders of the state that I have been elected to protect? I mean, those are things that they're going to have to seriously consider, because it's very obvious the Biden administration is not going to stop doing this. They made it very clear that they're going to exercise power and they are using it to punish their opponents. And they're going to make sure that no one can financially afford and professionally afford to go ahead and provide, you know, just basic information that counters their narrative. People are going to have to just be brave. You know, Steve is being brave through this. God bless him, you know, and he shouldn't have to go through this, but this is where we are. And, you know, there's a lot more of this that's going to come down the pipe. And a lot of people like GOP governors are going to have to start thinking about what that means, because if they're not willing to stand up, they're not willing to protect people, then the Biden administration is going to continue to do this kind of stuff. All right, guys, let's go ahead and move to the questions of the people real quick. Creeper Weird says Creeper Weird says, that's it, Orin. The woke is officially put away. Now the establishment will become Trump's best friend and then switch gears. It's happening. Yes. Once again, I feel pretty confident about my ability to secure a cigar from Academic Agent. I don't think the woke is going anywhere. Sadly, that probably doesn't mean great things for my country. I won't be happy about that fact if that ends up being the case, in the sense that it probably means bad things in my country are accelerating. But I do think that the prediction was accurate, if nothing else. Jacob Zindel says, 9-0, clearly we need to add another 10 justices to restore our democracy. Yeah, I mean, that's kind of a joke, but not really, right? That's exactly what the left is trying to do. They're trying to go ahead and pack the Supreme Court. They don't like the fact that conservatives managed to secure a slim majority on the court, and they want to go ahead and disrupt even that small break on their power. While that's kind of a joke, not really, it's probably exactly what they're going to try to do at some point. Deuce Boogaloo says, I understand the issue long term as a precedent, but does it really matter in 2024? If Trump is removed from the ballot in blue states, the only swing state completely run by Democrats in Michigan. Yeah, you're right that it doesn't matter for the actual electoral mechanics, right? Most of these states that were suggesting this were deep blue states. They were going to be going for Biden or whoever else ends up being the Democratic nominee, no matter what. You're exactly right about that. But yeah, the precedent is everything. If the Supreme Court, you know, allowed them to do this, then yeah, it's pretty much over, right? Because then every year the question becomes, oh, well, is your state going to let the opposing guy actually onto the ballot? And then at that point, what are you even pretending about elections? I mean, the election's already a joke, but at that point, it's just how many ballots can you deny your opponent in any given state? The election happens before the election happens, because each, you know, Supreme Court or each state individually just go ahead and strikes the opposition candidate off the ballot. And whoever can do that more often wins. I guess that's a version of, of some kind of process, but I don't think it's anything as to what people would understand as the American government or the way that elections were supposed to work our entire time. Smoky Mountain says, 9-0 gives Trump an optics PR victory in addition to a substantive victory. Do you think the leftist justices simply decided the hit to their credibility wasn't worth denying Trump a 9-0 win? Yeah, I think that's the case. You're right that it is somewhat of an optics PR victory. But I don't, like I said, I don't think it's actually significant really overall, because I don't think the Supreme Court was ever going to just declare the Republic over. And I think the two justices, the 7-2 that you would have expected with Jackson and someone like Sotomayor probably siding with Colorado, just wasn't worth it to them. The back door is still there. And again, they did go ahead and in their opinion, their concurrent, I guess, opinion, still said that it should be a federal office or a federal court. They didn't remand it only to Congress the way that many of the Republican appointees did. So they still did have a difference of opinion, even though it looks like a unified court in saying that Colorado can't do this unilaterally, that it is still somewhat. And of course, you also have to remember this in theory could swing both ways. So if they had opened this Pandora's box, then all of a sudden, swing states that are technically, strongly Republican controlled, like say Florida, Florida's a little less of a swing state than it used to be under DeSantis. You've kind of seen a concentration of red in the state, but it was a swing state for sure. And still probably is considered one to some degree. They could just go ahead and strip someone like Biden off the ballot. If you rule this direction, I mean, they wouldn't have the insurrection, but they could come up with something else. It was just a very dangerous precedent to set. And I don't think, like I said, I don't think it was worth their going ahead and endangering their credibility to go ahead and just give some kind of symbolic 2 vote that was going to fail anyway. Belial Bradley says the Colorado Secretary of State has the physiognomy of a Republican from 20 years ago. The march through the institutions have turned white women into the most ardent authoritarians. Their decision is a speed bump. I think there's a lot of truth to that. The divide has been, very clearly drawn in that way. Ultimately, this is just one of many tactics that the left was using to attack Donald Trump. They still have many other kind of things in their pocket to try to prevent him. Ultimately, this is why I don't think that this is why I don't think the woke can be put away. I think that, they are actively looking to defeat him in every area. I think the left is unhinged enough to try to push every aspect of this. The fact that I guess there was some restraint in an 9-0 decision instead of a 7-2 decision, maybe you could say that shows that they were willing to control themselves a little bit. But I think ultimately the left is just going to deploy everything they can to stop Trump, and I think people should be ready for that. He says physiognomy correction. All right, thank you, sir. Let's see. Creeper Weirdo says, I need to keep reminding myself that it's not 25 yet. There's still time. Yes, the range of our bet between me and AA is supposed to be till 2025. There's still the chance that Trump could just be elected, but then the left just completely chimps, which I think is actually quite likely at this point. And in that case, I would still win the bet. Again, not great for the country. Not hoping for the left to go ahead and chimp in a result to Donald Trump. But I think that is a very high possibility. All right, guys, we're going to go ahead and wrap this up. Thank you so much for coming by. If this is your first time on the stream or on the channel, go ahead and subscribe to the YouTube channel. If you'd like to go ahead and make sure you can catch these streams when they go live, you need to turn on the notifications, click the bell and everything so you can see when this is actually happening. And of course, if you'd like to go ahead and watch these or listen to these broadcasts as podcasts, you can go ahead and subscribe to the Orrin McIntyre Show on your favorite podcast platform. When you do, leave a rating or review. It really helps with the algorithm magic. Thank you once again for watching, guys. And as always, I will talk to you next time.